Perhaps here you've been absolutely smattered with Macworld news for the last few weeks because me and Paul Wheatley, did I tell you? We went to Macworld. It was great. It was fantastic. Met loads and loads of lovely
people.
No, I was there, Jeff. Yeah, I thought I was going to see you, but no. Actually, I have to say,
we feel disappointed.
Now you're downloading porn again, Jeff, because you've gone all 8-bit. Stop the porn, Jeff.
Yeah, still
again. Every week you do this. I know it might be cheap for you. It's like economy 7 for broadband for you guys, but you've got to stop downloading the porn during the show, especially when I'm going to say
my style.
A huge thank you. See what I'm drinking here? You see this superbly clear liquid? I mean, that looks like a glacial stream, and that's not a reference to golden showers or anything. It's that is a gin that was bought for me by Jeff Garrett. He turned up at Macworld, and he bought me some gin. And I've got to say, Jeff, you are the kindest man alive, because I gave this to my wife, and my wife's really good with gin. She knows her gins, definitely. And she said, that's not gin. That's too good to be gin. And it is. It is absolutely superb, Jeffrey. Tell everyone about your gin.
Oh, it's absolutely wonderful. It is magical. Okay, it's called Spirit Hound Gin. And it's from a distillery called Spirit Hound that is very close to where I live. It's in Lyon, Colorado. Very small little distillery. They do this amazing gin that they infuse with some lemon and lime and some other things. They don't tell you all of the
ingredients. You can't describe it in words. See, doing it with a bit of lemon and lime in England really doesn't cover it, because it sounds like a lager and lime. But this is a beautifully flavoured clear spirit. It's not gin. It's too good to be gin.
I can't believe it's not gin.
That's what it should be called. It should be called, I can't believe it's not gin. It is gin. I can't believe it is gin. Mate, I got to say, I would have gladly uncorked this while I was in the States, but it's the only gin I've ever seen that doesn't come in a screw-top bottle. It comes in a cork bottle, and I was shitting myself that if I undid it, it would undo in my bag and I wouldn't get any of it home. So, Jeffrey, thank you so much. When you come over for the bash, I will provide you with something that you cannot get in the US.
That's not right.
I can't wait.
It depends whether Angela lets me or not. But there we go.
We'll just see how it all plays out.
Joining me to discuss the week in tech, the fantastic panel is, from Sweden, the man who blogs like no other I've ever seen and who's got a book that's well worth a read. It's the Streak Machine. How you doing, pal?
I'm doing pretty okay, thank you very much. Sorry, I couldn't hear.
Pretty okay. I'm absolutely ordinary, that sounds like.
Yeah, well, I'm an average kind of guy, you know, mild-mannered and all that, but I don't go hopping into non-existent phone booths anymore and transform into some mysterious flying weird alien.
Well, that's always good to get out of your system. Now you had a book out, unfortunately, the week before we went off to Macworld, so we kind of glossed over it a bit. How's the sales of the book going?
Oh, it's over my expectations, at least. I mean, for the first thing I've ever published, even if it is self-published, I mean, I'm really impressed that people actually bought it at all, to be honest.
Now, like bigging yourself up, is there? Now, when we get to the end street, we say, where can we get hold of it? Make sure you mention your damn book, okay? Because we didn't do it
on
the show, and we'll do it again tomorrow, hopefully. Next to him, Jeff Gamet, ace man from Denver, back in Boulder, and still in choppy vision, unfortunately, but I don't know why.
Well, I fear the choppy vision out of my control, because I don't have control over the network that's in my place, so I'm kind of screwed.
Yeah,
sorry about that. Other than being 8-bit, I'm doing good.
Okay, and is Angela forgiven me yet for shooting her from beneath at the Apple campus?
You know, she's brought it up a couple times. She's always laughing and smiling when she does. I think she actually felt bad for you, because it was like, hey, take this picture. No, you're doing it all wrong.
Yeah, I've never done this before.
It was it was pretty funny.
I got Alison Sheridan to admit that the camera on a Nokia 1020 is better than the camera on an iPhone. So, mate, I'm golden. There's nothing you can do to me. Next to him, our ace cameraman from Macworld, it's Paul Shadwell.
Good evening.
And have you recovered, mate? Is the jet lag worn off yet or not?
I'm just about recovering, yeah.
Just about. Now, straight back into the fray.
Into the fray of what?
Of work.
Yeah, kind of.
And a new car, an electric car.
Oh, yes.
You've got to fill us in on that, mate. You're the network's resident Bobby Llewellyn.
Okay.
So what have you found? Is the range good enough? Does it cost a fortune or is it?
Absolutely not. No. I mean, yesterday we drove up to Constance, which is about.
I know Constance very well.
You do?
Well, I've been in most of the restaurants and bars, if that's what you mean.
Ah. I thought you were talking about some young lady.
No. No, Constance. I've worked in Constance many a day.
Okay.
I took the wife and family there.
Well, it's not very far from here. It's about an hour and a half drive. Maybe not even that. So we drove the Renault Zoe all the way up there. And there's one of the multi-story car parks had a free charging point. So whilst we went and had lunch and did some other stuff, the car was charged up for free.
The Hexen cooking's good. And also there's a very good Indian restaurant. Not bad at all.
We actually had Indian, surprisingly.
Yes, it's the place in the middle of the square, isn't it? Just behind the Hexen cooking.
Yeah, we found that one after we'd been to the one we ate in, which we thought afterwards we should have gone to that one.
No, the guy that's in the one that's in the middle of the town square, I went up to him and I said, that was fantastic. I've never eaten a chicken balti like that before. Where are you from? And he said, Birmingham.
I actually had a chicken vindaloo.
Oh, right.
Which was actually very good, but the service was a bit dire. Oh. And there was only three other people in there, which should have given us the signal.
You bought a Zoe, says Mac Jim. What's wrong with the Tesla then? Why did you buy a Tesla, eh? Why did you buy a Tesla, eh? I'm telling you, boy, you cheap.
I would have done if I could afford it.
And last but by no means least, it's Righty Boy.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm all right. That's a bit peppy, isn't it?
Hey, here we go.
You ready? Have you missed podcasting by any chance?
Oh, God, I really have missed it. How dare you go away to America, have a really good time, and rub it in my nose, you've had a really good time.
And not let you on.
Exactly. So I'm back, and we're going to have a lot of fun. I've forgotten how to do it now.
Yeah, righto. You never knew how to do it. What are you on about?
Oh, cheers, mate.
The Week in Tech. Now, before we start, you'll notice that we've started a Patreon fund, and I've had a couple of emails from people saying they're not going to listen anymore. Now we've started begging. I just wanted to point out that in the cabinet to the right of me, I've got a £500 mixer, I've got a MacBook Pro, I've got three MacBook Airs, and I've got two UPSs. I've got a Mac Pro underneath that was donated by Don McAllister. We can't do this show without equipment, and we're starting to get to the stage where stuff is starting to wear out. I've just bought £350 worth of lighting, because the lighting in here is starting to go. We're not asking you to, we're not begging you for anything. We're going to still carry on producing the shows because we love doing it. Just like Righty there, you know, we really love the idea of sitting talking to you like every week. And it's great. And I love the people that take part. Thank you very much. All we're saying is, if you go to patreon.com/British Tech Network, you can donate $1. $1 is 60 pence. And if you're saying that all the shows that we provide you with are worth 60 pence a month, then we're great. Thank you very much. That's lovely. If everyone donated it, we'd get past our second milestone. We have that many downloads, no question. 40,000 people download the Mac Show and 26,000 people a week download the Big Show. If you all gave us $1, then we'd be well past all of that. And we're talking about going to EBX at the Gamer Show thing in a couple of months. And we're going to give you live coverage from there as well. And if we get past $12,000 a month donations, we will fund all of that process. So we'll go out to all those events, I promise you. And here's the best bit. If you're a Patreon subscriber, you get to enter automatically the competition this week. Now, normally we do competitions where you go send in an email. That's not going to happen. If you're a Patreon subscriber, you can enter the competition. If you're not a Patreon subscriber, you can't. And this is the prize. The prize is my speakers backpack from Macworld. Okay? Now, there was only 50 of these, so there's only 50 of these in the whole world. Now, fortunately, it's got loads of compartments, and there's loads of stuff in the compartments. What is there? There is, in any case, there's two of them. Two any cases that we got from Steve, wonderful bloke, and you can put your iPhone or your iPad or any cell phone into these and mount it onto a standard photographic tripod. So you get two of those. You're also going to get a square jellyfish mount for your iPad mini or iPhone, and that goes onto a standard mount for a camera. You also get a Red Bull tag that we got outside Apple. I don't know why you want that, but never mind. We got it free outside Apple. Now, what else is there? There's a piece of bum fluff. There we go. Sorry. what's in the middle one? What's in the middle one? Here we go. There is a tag to hold your pass at work, which has got Apple on it. You can't get these unless you go to the Apple store at Cupertino. That's in the campus, and I got you one. So there you go, there's one. And also, if you're worried about the fact that you can't work next to forklift trucks, it pulls apart and comes off, so that's fine. Ain't going to worry. And it's yet. In there as well, we've got another compartment. And you get a sales navigation flask that you can put your stuff in. You get a Scott Eves cap, which has got a little thing in here you can put your iPhone in. In the peak, you get that as well. And you get a square jellyfish iPhone holder that goes on any standard photographic tripod. And you get a voucher for Trunks, which is a photo sharing application, an editing application. You get a free version of Airfoil as well from those wonderful people that do Rogue Amoeba. They do, what's the one that they do? The audio capture thing that's brilliant. You also get InDrive as well. You get a free voucher for their software, as well as you get a green envelope, which doesn't show up on a video podcast where you're using a green screen. But I promise you that it's worth having, because inside you've got 10 free licenses to Endpoint Protector, which are absolutely brilliant. For 12 months they are. So you can get those and have a go. You also get a glyph. So if you've got a cell phone, you can hold it up on the train and that kind of stuff. And this one also clamps now. It's got a little Allen key in it. And you can fix it to your tripod. And, not finished, you get a copy of Animation and Photo FX, iClone and Talk Frenzy and Face Filter, which is from Real Illusion Software. And you get the Cooper product, Innovative Solution. This is like a handband that goes around your iPad Air, and you can hold it in your hand behind. That's brilliant. And oh, one more. Here we go. You get a square jellyfish micro tripod. There you go. That's beautiful. Not finished yet. Two more compartments to go. In this one, now, if you didn't go to the Cultcast party, you don't get any of these. Jeff, did you go to the Cultcast party?
No, I had to finish putting my presentation together.
Well, Jeff doesn't have any of these. I have four. No. I have four. Here you go. I've got four of their beer cooler things that you can get at the Cultcast party. They're yours as well as. I've also got...
exclusive even. I don't have those.
Yes, even you.
I had four.
You got four of them. I've got the Tam O'Shanter that we use for the drinking games that Paul brought. I have a book arc from 12 South. That's $70 worth right there. Yep, and that's my own. I'll put that in. And that's the end of that compartment. We've still got two more compartments to go. In this one, you have a Docket.com set of earphones and holder. Now, unless you went to Cirque du Mac, Jeff, did you go to Cirque du Mac?
Of course I did. It's my party.
There we go. Now, if you went to Cirque du Mac, you got a Cirque du Mac t-shirt. And if you didn't, you don't get one of these. But I got you a Cirque du Mac t-shirt. There you go. So you can have one of those. And we're not finished yet. We've got a Bodyguard Z Tough Protector. And for your iPhone, that was. We've got a Trident waterproof and hard shell protector thing for your iPhone. And we've got a Sennheiser Pass thing, and we've got My Speaker Pass to Macworld 2014. And we've got a Cultcast Live Party, which gives you a free Discade license on the back. And we've got a Tidy Up with license. There's a disc there you can put on that will tidy up your Mac. And you've got a mini square jellyfish tripod, as well as the micro one. And you've got a free copy of Cybersecurity from ESET, which is brilliant. That's worth an awful lot. And you've got an invitation to the TAP launch party, and you've got an invitation and ticket to the Cirque du Mac party. And that's that compartment. And the last compartment probably has got absolutely sod all in it, but no, it hasn't. It's got a GorillaPod. There you go. And it's got all my drinks vouchers from Cirque du Mac that I didn't use because I was filming. All right, there you go. So you get the backpack and you get all that stuff that I've just shown you. But here's the rub. You only get it if you're a Patreon subscriber. So if you go to patreon.com/British Tech Network, then you can enter the competition just by giving us a dollar. That's it. Here's the thing, though. If you donate $15, you get 15 entries. If you donate $10 a month, you get 10 entries. If you donate $1 a month, you get one entry. Okay? So it's up to you how much you donate. We're not asking you for anything that you can't afford. Do whatever you can. We will only charge you based on the monthly stuff that you put in. Also, if you give us monthly subscriptions through our normal PayPal subscription thing, you'll be entered as well as. But you will get all of that stuff as a prize. How good is that as a prize, fellas?
Amazing. But Ewan, how do we get to go to the amazing Patreon website?
How do you get to the Patreon website? You go to www.patreon.com/British Tech Network. I think I've said it about three times. And all you have to do is enter yourself, give us donations, and you can get that. And every month, we will give away something fantastic. Next month, in May, we've got MacPaw Software giving away three copies of Clean My Mac and three copies of Hyder 2. So we'll be giving away loads and loads the following month as well. And we're going to do that every month from now on. But it's only if you're a Patreon subscriber. Simple as that. If you value the podcasts we give you, and we've got a new show starting next week called The Help Show, which we'll talk about a bit later, there's tons of stuff coming up, but we're only going to give the prizes away to people who support us. You've got to say you value what we do, and if you don't value what we do, then don't listen, all right? I can't stand people that turn up and watch buskers for half an hour and walk away not having given them anything, and that's what we are. We're buskers. So please, please, please go to patreon.com, patreon.com/British Tech Network, and subscribe, and you can win all of this stuff. There is an enormous amount here, and you will not get a speaker bag from Macworld, I promise you. The only reason this is up for grabs is because I brought it home, and the wife said, oh, Jesus, not another frigging bag. So there you go. Otherwise, I'd be keeping it for myself, and I'm just going to scrape all this lot on the floor, but I promise you it's not going to get damaged. There we go. Patreon.com/British Tech Network, and you can win all of that crap. There we go. The Week in Tech, what have we got? Fellas, who's going to start us off? Who's got a fantastic story?
I suppose everyone's going to do the elephant in the room, aren't they? Which is the heart bleed.
Righty, do the elephant in the room. Off you go.
Well, it seems we've all been leaking data for the last couple of years, haven't we? There's been a massive kind of SSL hole that many of the major providers have kind of been no one noticed. We don't actually know if anyone's actually taken our data yet. But what they're trying to tell us right now is change all your passwords because we don't know what sort of risk we're at. But they're kind of saying it's the worst kind of vulnerability that we've ever faced. And the question is, how did we actually get to this point? Because actually all the major websites, Google, Yahoo, Facebook, all of those sort of things. Is anyone actually worried about it?
Well, my question, first of all, is lots of people were telling me what I should and shouldn't do. They were saying, right, OK, go to your supplier of whatever it is that it is and change your password. But don't change your password until they've told you that they've changed their SSL certificate. And it only applies to OpenSSL, doesn't it? But
yes.
My mm-hmm. question was, what is this thing done slash doing? Have they effectively hacked into the OpenSSL system? And I can't get a straight answer on that, I have to say.
Well, no, it's a hole in the system, and no one knows if anyone's taken advantage of it. But obviously, to be safe, just in case someone's taken advantage of the hole, you should actually change all your login details just in case someone has. So we don't know if we're in trouble yet, but we may well be in trouble.
Now, Jeff,
it's really sketchy of where it is.
Jeffrey's the proper journalist here.
Yes, and I just spend a lot of time digging into this just to sort of get it all out. So the problem is that OpenSSL, certain versions, well, every version for the past 2 years, has a flaw in the code that's part of Heartbeat function. And Heartbeat is the function that lets your connection stay active instead of timing out and your connection to a specific server. So what happens is bad guys or anyone can send a malformed Heartbeat request. So it includes half the data that needs to be there. And the way that the code is written, when it gets the request, it then replies back with the other part of the handshake, but it's based on a memory location. So what ends up happening is that gets shifted off from what it's supposed to be. The handshake being sent by the requester is too small. So now you end up getting random pieces of memory from the server. And if you do this enough, you can build up a snapshot of what the server's memory looks like, and that can include the private keys for two-factor authentication. And once you have those private keys, now you have the ability to decrypt anything that's passing back and forth between the servers.
That's just completely open at that point.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like not having any encryption at all. The bad thing is there's no way to know if you've been compromised. So the fix is, if you are using Apache or any of the other open server systems that have OpenSSL installed, you need to make sure you update it to the OpenSSL package to 1.0.1.g. And when you do that, you will have a fixed version. And you... And the flaw won't be there anymore. At that point, all of the SSL certificates that you have will probably need to be regenerated because they're potentially compromised. And your end users need to change all their passwords because those are potentially compromised as well. And there's no way to know if you've been compromised unless you just start seeing weird stuff happening that you weren't expecting.
I mean, Anders in the chat room is saying you say two things. First thing is sensible, which is changing your password won't help, which is about you're the end user, but your supplier has to change their version of OpenSSL and reissue their certificate, otherwise you're stuffed. And he's also saying the only safe practice is to avoid the internet entirely.
Well, that's what some people have been told to do, especially on the Tor network, haven't they?
Mm-hmm.
Avoid it, because they're actually saying after the patch has been installed and updated and certificates have been updated, there is still a chance of memory bleed even after the update that you still may get caught out. So it sounds pretty scary, but Joe blogs on the street, how scared should they be?
I mean, realistically, I've done nothing. And I can't see me doing anything until I know. Now, Barclays have said that they've updated all of their stuff. But Barclays, I've got to go through an encryption system to get him anyway through me PIN Sentry. But mm-hmm. good on them. You know, Barclays have been proactive. Mm-hmm. There was a great tweet from Molly Wood, who, I have to say, said anyone who's operating has to send out an information update to their customers that says, we have patched this flaw. We either we don't have OpenSSL and this doesn't affect us, or we do have OpenSSL and we've solved the problem. And I think that's a great point. There's a definite requirement on suppliers to give positive information one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
Definitely. No, I was just going to chime in there and say that what you were saying there, they really need to get this information out to their customers now so they know that it's now is the time to change your password, because now we have fixed the stuff on our side. And before that happens, you don't really get too much of an effect of changing your password, perfectly honestly.
Yeah, thanks for the explanation there, Jeff. That's the first I've actually really properly understood it. I listened to Steve Gibson yesterday. He lost me after how I am Steve Gibson.
I've got your back.
iBook in the chat says SSI Labs has tools for testing. If you go to https://www.ssllabs.com, they will test your system and tell you whether you agree or not. Sarah Jane says, totally agree, Ewan. I went to my bank today and thought it was safe to use their site or not. Not heard anything from them, even if they are not using SSL. And it's only OpenSSL, isn't it, that's the problem?
Yep. For a change, Microsoft products were not affected by this security problem. Because they have their own SSL implementation.
Go on, say Jeff again, Jeff.
Yeah, it was bound to happen sometime that Microsoft would get lucky like that.
Yeah, yep. Doesn't affect you. Now, this does affect you if you've got a Mac, because it's to do with your browser, isn't it? So it's not anything that you can, your OS won't defend against it.
No, not at all. But then there's that kind of thing. How many people are actually going to update their password if told? Because we're in the same week that XP support ended, and how many people are running XP and they've been told for years? So there's a huge security flaw right there right now, isn't there?
Paul, anything to add? Shadwell, anything to add? You're on mute.
Sorry.
I think Paul's on mute.
No, he's on mute. He's been talking incessantly, but just not getting through.
Yeah, so I panicked for a moment.
You work in banking, don't you? So
I work in the financial industry, yeah, and most of them don't use OpenSSL. In fact, I would say all of them don't use OpenSSL.
Isn't that a heartwarming fact?
And if they do, they should be shot.
All right, okay. Well, Barclays said, and I quote their tweet, if I can just find it, because it was a while ago now. I've got to scroll back. Bear with me. It was after Good Pony. Where's it gone? Where's this bloody gone? Barclays, you bastards. Here we go. Barclays said, we take all potential vulnerabilities seriously and have been investigating all of our platforms following the news of Heartbleed bug. We can confirm that the technology platforms used by Barclays and business banking customers are unaffected by this issue. So that sounds like what you've just said, Paul.
Right.
They don't do it. Ewan loves Barclays, says Bookering. No, I frigging don't. The thing is today, I went to a place and on the way home from work and I spent £1,000 on something, right? And it's just like, you put your thing in, you put your pin in. Yep, no problem. There you go. And two weeks ago in Australia, no, in America, I put my credit card into Target and I typed in my PIN number correctly and they went, nah, bollocks, and they blocked my card. I was stuck in San Francisco with no credit card. Fortunately, I had a thought in my mind, I bet these bastards are going to do this, and I took another card with me and I just went back to the apartment, transferred a pile of funds over so that I could use the other credit card. And the personal one, they let it go just fine. Barclays, you're a bunch of wankers. And then when I wrote to them and said, I want to complain, they wrote back and said, we've done an internal review and we believe we've acted properly on this. They did that within a day. In a day, they did an internal review and said, we were perfectly entitled to block your card in America when you used it. And yet today, I've used it for a £1,000 purchase and they've done nothing. Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead. Totally within your spending pattern, spending £1,000 randomly.
Sounds like someone in the complaints department down in the basement there just like roll the dice and, oh, okay, no, he doesn't get anything.
I don't know if I've said this already, but Barclays, you wankers.
They're all don't a bunch of merchant bankers.
How do you really feel?
They're wankers. I hope you don't work for Barclays.
Yeah, you and it's merchant banker.
Merchant banker, there we go. But if only they did something useful like that. No, they don't. I'm calm now that I'm back. I've got access to my credit card again. Oh, there we go. So Heartbleed, thumbs down, but thumbs up, but thumbs down. Because some have acted well and some haven't. If you're listening and you've been affected by Heartbleed and you've got a system, just reassure everyone, eh? Just let them know. Mm-hmm. That's all you got to do. Streak, what did you bring for us, buddy?
I found something rather interesting coming from the University of Edinburgh. They have actually managed to regenerate, yes, you heard me right, regenerate a living organ. Breakthrough, as far as I can understand it. Like an old, shall we say, organ, in this case, the thymus of a mouse. They've managed to regenerate it so it effectively became young again and started working as it did when it was young.
So, okay, I've got the website up here, but I'm actually no wiser. So what... Mm-hmm. Medical procedures that can rejuvenate human body parts have moved a step closer with the completion of a new study. A team of scientists from the University of Edinburgh succeeded in regenerating a living organ.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thymus of a mouse must be pretty small. They must generate fairly quickly because they breed like rabbits. Well, they breed like mice, but
yeah, exactly.
You get my point.
Mm-hmm. Presumably, yes. I concur with your assessment there, definitely. So it's just a small step, but it's a significant step towards being able to, well, at least figuring out and understanding how we can, at least on a theoretical level even, just regenerate a human organ of any kind. Like, say you have a failing kidney or whatever, and you can get an injection or something, and hey, presto, it starts working better again. So, I mean, it's a huge breakthrough in that simple aspect, at least.
I mean,
can you imagine if they... and alcohol, we could drink all the time and our livers would not have any trouble. Oh, my God.
Yes.
So okay, already we have a commercial application available and ready.
I was going to play devil's advocate there, but now that Jeff's brought in drinking bollocks, I think it's a fantastic idea. No, I mean, the point I was going to make was my grandma got to quite a bad state with angina, and one of the night, two or three nights before she died, she said, why don't they just let me die? And there's a certain element to this that's about the palliative care you offer to people. When if people want to go, you just kind of let them, you know. And when your body wears out, it's good. I mean, we've already got 7 billion people on the planet that we can't feed. I have a hard time with this kind of stuff because I'm going to get letters of complaint here about this, and I'm not suggesting that we turn into the Nazi Empire, but there's a certain point where you just have to let people go if they really want to go.
Respect nature.
Yeah, absolutely. I might be speaking out of turn there, but...
No, I don't think so. I mean, I see this as, say, someone who's young and have, for whatever reason, a failing organ. I mean, it could be a huge thing that could save a life of someone who hasn't really lived that long yet. And it could even make suffering less if you're in, like, your older age. I mean, so it's I think it's a huge potential for good, but I do share your concern there for the... shall we call it the eternal life crowd who seem to be
scary. I think if you're talking about people that have got degenerative defects that are there from birth, then this kind of technology is fantastic for them. That ability to repair organs that are are malfunctioning. Say you've got someone who's born with diabetes and you can repair the insulin. What's it? Oh, Jesus Christ. I was actually knowledgeable when I started this podcast.
Then you beat me to it. I was never really that knowledgeable. I just pretend to be.
That secretes insulin? No. One of those, anyway.
Yeah, that gin's pretty good stuff, isn't it?
It's freaking great, dude. I have no idea. I'm nearly close to forgetting my own name. But anyway, yeah, that kind of stuff, if you can repair that kind of birth defect of diabetes and those kind of things, then yeah, absolutely all for it. But as long as it doesn't get applied to people who are just coming to the end and are happy to be at the end, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
completely with you there. I'm just thrilled that we're making some positive medical progress.
Yeah, no, I think it's absolutely fantastic. If this is, I've probably killed that subject stone dead there, haven't I? Sorry, fellas. I did try and keep the conversation going. Jeffrey, what did you bring, dude? Save us. Yours is bound to be something like bees wearing yellow coats.
Mine's the end of times. It just seemed appropriate to go with some sort of doomsday story, considering we have the whole heartbeat thing happening. But
Jeff, can you just stop your video, mate, and just keep your audio going? Because at the moment, we're losing your audio, and we haven't got your video anyway.
Sure. Hold on.
I thought it'd be. I haven't got.
All right, video is off.
There we go. Start again. What have you brought?
Okay.
I'll edit.
So I brought a doomsday story this week, it's about the end of times, according to a bunch of biblical scholars. So the deal is, starting next week, we have a series of four blood moons happening, which it's actually just lunar eclipses. And the series of having four of these in succession doesn't happen very often, but it's actually a very cool thing. That what I found very interesting about this is that a lot of religious groups that are looking at this as a sign that we're at the end of times. So hold on, I'll drop a chat room about what's actually happening. And there we go. So there's a nice story for space.com about exactly what's happening. So the deal is, we get these moons that are eclipsed because light has to pass from the sun through Earth's atmosphere and then moon. It ends up being kind of a red color. And it's just a normal thing that happens, not very often. Last time it happened was in 2004, I believe. And it will happen probably, it'll be a handful of times the rest of the century. It's just very interesting that here we are at a point in our evolution where we have the scientific technology to be able to look at what's happening and figure out little patterns, the way light's going to hit things. So we understand exactly what's happening. And we have large groups of people that are still treating this the mysticism that our species did like 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, it's interesting actually.
So not nearly 6 Morgan. So
there's an interesting that there's an advert at the bottom of that page for four reasons why your Mac is slow, Jeff. which you might want to click on. I got hardly any of that.
Get my mouse pointer over there.
So there's there's four blood moons coming between April 2014 and September 2015. And we know why it's happening, is the long and short of it. But the Daily Mail says the world is about to be plunged into. You made me click a Daily Mail link, mate. I can't ever forgive you for that.
Have another drink.
Okay, I forgive you. But the Daily Mail... the Daily Mail says that world could be plunged into crisis is 2014. Cambridge expert predicts great events... which determined the course of the century. There we go. It's 2012
now, okay.
All over again.
The crappy thing is that bad things happen every day. We have a big planet with a lot of people doing a lot of stupid things, so bad things are just going to happen. What that means is that after this series of lunar eclipses, there will be people that will point to whatever they can find and say, see, this is proof of the apocalypse or the end of times or whatever disaster they wanted it to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's the rapture all over again, Harold Camping and all that kind of stuff. But he's gone, fortunately. The chat room's gone off on one, Jeff. I'm awfully sorry. Can you just feel Skype trying to assemble all the bits dribbling out of Jeff's computer at the wrong end? he should sign in on Skype Mobile. It handles the bandwidth far better, says Kelly. Paul Shadwell says, hello, Mac Vader. And Mac Vader gives him a wave back. And I can't believe I may have cut down the garlic in this recipe, says Bat Winch. And she was talking about washing her cleavage again in the shower, which kind of distracted me a little bit at the start, despite Jeff's audio. There we go.
I can understand why.
Yes. I'm trying to find the cleavage line. But it's to do with, I need another shower, and it was something to do with tea in a cleavage, which I don't get. And the body regeneration thing, Princess Bagel says, is Joan Rivers a subject for this? Joan Rivers died 20 years ago. What the hell are you on? I know she still goes on TV regularly, but she's still dead 20 years ago. I went to see Tom Merritt in LA. Hello, Tom Merritt. He's at Illinois talking to his alma mater today. But we parked in Manhattan Beach in a car park, and there was two women in jogging gear that walked past, clearly not related to each other, but they'd had so much Botox they looked like twin sisters. I kid you not.
Twin sisters.
Ouch.
It was wow. Awful. It was Botox. There we go. Apparently, she's dropped pasta down her boobs, says Princess Bagel. I'm not sure why that enhances your week, but there you go.
Because boobs. Come on, Ewan.
Boobs. Who said boobs? Boobs. Every podcast should have boobs. No question. That's all the female listeners gone then. Thanks, Jeff.
Sure thing.
I don't know about anyone else, but I don't subscribe to the end of the world happening in 2014. No?
I live in Norfolk, mate. We point at the moon and wonder what it is.
That you ate. Wow. Mac yep. Vader said tea down the boobs. No, apparently it's pasta down the boobs. I don't know why she typed tea, but the tea must come into it somewhere. Maybe you can make tea with pasta. Who knows? But I wouldn't put the whole water down there. The end of the world stuff I just can't be doing with, I have to say. But I tell you what I did do. I went to Capitol Records, and I've got to say, they've rebuilt that building really well since 2012. You can't tell. You cannot tell. I can't read any of the stuff that's in the chat room at the moment.
Uh-oh.
It's just not... It's not really, even I can't bleep that. Oh, good pony. Paul Shadwell, new boy on the big show. Hello. You must have brought a story. Bring us a story, boy. What did you bring us?
Once upon a time. What sort of story are you talking about?
I did send you a tweet that said it's a bring a story party, and I've given you three options now so far, so I hope you've got one.
Three options?
Well, no, I've given you three warnings that people bring stories. Do you want me to come back to you?
No. Oh. I actually have something.
You're just winding me up.
I don't know if it's relevant. I hope it's relevant, because this week is the NAB show.
It is, yes.
And I've been watching to see if there's anything new and exciting coming, and there has.
Could your story contain the words black magic?
Actually, that was one of the things, but it wasn't on my list.
Oh, okay. All right, because they've released some fantastic cameras, haven't they, this week?
Yes, those cameras look really cool.
Yeah, and the prices are pretty good as well.
Yeah, yeah. So that's interesting. Actually, because I have a Blackmagic pocket camera here, and when I got back from Macworld, there was some piece of equipment, which maybe I'll show you later. You were. Anyway, that's what I was... What I was most interested in was the fact that Panasonic released the GH4, and also Sony brought out an A7S, and the A7S looks very interesting. Both of these cameras, about the size of a small Micro Four Thirds camera, except the Sony one has got a full frame sensor in it.
Well, there's a certain element of full-frame sensor that I do rail against with the amateur photographers, because they keep going about wanting full-frame sensor, but I say to you, well, what's it giving you then? Because actually, what you see in the viewfinder is a 92% to 98% crop of what you're actually going to get on the end product anyway. So, fill the frame. Why do you want full sensor as opposed to crop sensor?
Okay. I thought it was interesting that it had that.
Yeah, no, it is. But it's interesting why people see it as a sales feature to me.
Right. The thing about the Panasonic, which is probably of interest to me, is that it not only is it a it is actually a Micro Four Thirds camera, so it takes Micro Four Thirds lenses, of course.
Superb.
But they actually brought out an add-on for it, which turns it into a fully functional pro video camera.
Very nice.
It fits on the bottom like a battery pack, except that it has SDI out. Sorry, 4 SDI out, because it does 4K.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a 16-megapixel sensor, isn't it? But with 4K video that's added on a durable all-weather sealed magnesium body. And you're getting all of this for £1,300, according to Wex Photographic at the moment.
Yeah, $1,600.
Maximum ISO 25-600.
But 2,000 for the add-on, but it does add a whole bunch of features, including XLR audio.
That's interesting. Very interesting.
Excuse me, I need to wipe the drool off the floor a bit here.
The Panasonic stuff, I mean, Lumix has always been a fantastic range. I mean, I know going back to the start of the photo show, and we were all in unison saying that the Lumix is absolutely the best camera that's out there at the moment for the compact market. And the G series has always held up at its own end pretty well. I'm just looking on Wex here, and I can't see anything for the accessory.
Yeah, I was just looking at the number.
They're suggesting that the standard body shoots 4K.
Yeah. But you can't, it won't record 4K without this feature.
Yeah.
That's the only problem.
They're not listing any accessories, unfortunately, as well. But I mean, £1,200 is a very good price for the initial start. And if you're talking about another £2,000 to add on, that's a really, really good price. $3,500 effectively for a 4K digital camera that's at broadcast quality.
Yes.
Very good.
A fraction of the price of a pro video camera that does all that.
I mean, I'm just going to try and look in the specs here, but do you know whether they've upped the frame rate on the 1080? Because, I mean, one of the things that I really struggle with is they keep giving me 4K, but I don't want to process 4K. I don't want all the aggro 4K. Most of my customers actually show it on a bloody projector in a very brightly lit room, so 4K is a complete waste of money anyway. But I do want is you know, up to 240 frames a second capture at 1080.
They did say that one of the features of this is that you can, if you're recording 4K but only outputting 1080, is that you have the whole of that area to play with. So if you can actually zoom in and do all sorts of stuff without losing quality.
Yeah, it's frame rate that's the key start for me.
Definitely. Yeah, I can't remember what the frame rate was.
It's talking about going as low as 12 frames per second on burst mode. But whether that applies to the video or not, or whether that's just...
No, it's not video. Stills. That's when you hold the shutter button down, you're taking normal pictures.
Yeah, that's burst mode.
12, yeah.
12 frames is good.
But for video...
It goes up to 60 minute as well. So, and most cameras will switch off after 30 minutes. So a 60 minute bulb setting is very, very good. You get some fantastic stuff with that at low ISO. It's a good idea. I think I'd be interested to see what they've done with the frame weights, Paul, I have to say. But depth of defocus as well. This looks like it's a kind of refocusing software. Technology combined with the speed of the Venus engine ensures lightning fast autofocus. So.
Oh yeah, that was one of the other features they mentioned.
What was do you say there was another story you got from NAB?
Well, there's a whole bunch of them, but as you say, the other one was the Blackmagic, their new studio camera range that they've brought out. Affordable as well. I like the one that has the big monitor on the back, that has but on the front it just looks like a little camera with a MFT fitting on it.
I think that the interesting one for me is the what did come out was from NAB was the Blackmagic stuff. There's a studio camera for Blackmagic which is just loading up now. And that looked fantastic. And it was only sort of £2,500. 4K digital studio cam, direct live out, and away you go.
Yeah.
That was awesome. And there's also a recording unit you can fix to it. So that should have an effect on the rest of the market in terms of prices as well, though, which is nice.
Yeah, there's also a company called Atomos, which is an Australian company that are doing 4K recorders for these cameras.
That attach on to.
Yeah, for only $2,000. And you can plug in any type of recording hardware, so normal hard disk or SSDs.
Hmm.
The beauty of the Blackmagic cinema camera is, I mean, that's down now to £2,300, the 4K version, which is brilliant because that was up at 4.5K. That's had a massive effect then. And they took SSDs, and that was the thing for me, was I could look at a project and say, right, I'm going to buy a 128 SSD at £60, and that's for the project. I can keep all my Final Cut files on it. I can keep all the raw image files off it, off the thing, and just slide it in and out. And also with the Go Drive stuff from Seagate, it's easy enough to just plug in and out on hot swap on the road. So
There was also a company that had little, you know, like the, I think we were talking about this at the Macworld, three-axis gimbals.
Yes.
There's a company that has brought out a little handheld gimbal that's a, I think it's a one or a two-axis, but it's, you hold it like a trigger, like a gun, and the GoPro sits on the top of it.
Excellent.
There's another little gadget, that's all.
That's brilliant. NAB has been quite interesting this year because normally you look at NAB and there's a couple of things and then the rest of it's kind of like CES, no price, no date. But actually this year there's been an awful lot of stuff and it's interesting to go there and look at the 4K Blackmagic and the price has just tumbled on that instantly because of the release of the new stuff. So well done, NAB. And we've got Chris Eschweiler there at the moment. He's there for the whole thing. He does AV stuff. We're going to invite him on the show next week, so we'll have a chat and see if we can get him back on to talk about any of the other stuff that's been cool at NAB. What I really want is a 4 HDMI switcher so that I can do the green screen and stuff. We're having a big move around in the studio in the next couple of weeks. Everything will change. It's all going to go through 90 degrees, and we're going to have all green screen behind me. So it should be loads.
Have you looked at the Blackmagic Studio, 8M Studio?
I saw the studios, but the only problem is there's no recording function in those, is it? You've got to go out to an external recording.
You do, but it does give you the switching capability.
Yeah, which is cool. You can use the HDMI in and out.
Yep. Does HDMI and SDI? So
Batwinch is upset at us because we're talking seriously about cameras when we could be talking about her cleavage, dildos, and going in and out, unquote.
Oh, yes, please.
Thank you for that welcome distraction. Princess Bagel did write a little ditty earlier on about Batwench's boobs, but I can't find it now. And it was kind of along the roses are red, violets are blue type stuff, but maybe she deleted it.
Have you seen the next one? Shall I read it?
Go ahead, read it for us, Paul.
There once was a naughty Jeff G who prefers to go pants-free. He ran from police in night but a fleece, but caught by a kinky Canadian Mountie.
Very good. Jeffrey, are you impressed with that?
I am. Slow clap. Well played.
Oh, not impressed. Who hasn't brought a story, or is it just me?
You, sir.
It's just me. Mine was from Engadget, and I thought this was quite an interesting one, only just because, like, you know, when you read something and you're kind of like, well, I thought that's what you did anyway. And it's Microsoft have replaced their lead, Mark Whitten, on Xbox with Phil Spencer. And the comment that really struck me as quite interesting was a refocus on gaming. And I'm kind of thinking, well, it's not what the Xbox does. Discuss.
Well, they've kind of been... That was the kind of thing between the PS4 and the Xbox, wasn't it? It was kind of who was fighting for the living room in the terms of the media center and who was kind of focused on gaming. I think the jury was out that PS4 won on the gaming, where Xbox kind of focused too much on the living room experience of media and films and that. So maybe that's probably that their focus wasn't on gaming, because there was a lot of missteps as well about them. You know, you couldn't use secondhand games and all that sort of thing. So maybe that misstep, they kind of go back and relaunch it. Because do we know what the sales figures are? PS4 versus Xbox One?
No, I don't. Anyone else?
In general, what I know is that none of the next generation consoles, so to speak, are selling as great as they hoped or expected currently.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Xbox, as far as I understand it, is doing... both of them are doing fantastically well on the video front. They're extremely up on the graphics. But, and the gameplay's ineffective, you know, they're really good. The Forza stuff is definitely doing very well on the Xbox. But it was just kind of the idea of the thought process that Microsoft have got distracted with the Xbox being a media centre away from it being a games console in the first place.
But Bill Gates was always kind of obsessed with kind of conquering the living room, wasn't he? That was kind of his kind of thing, but whether he did it through the PC or the Xbox, he was going to win it any way he could. I think they did really well with the 360. It was a really good console media wise. I don't think with mobile gaming and things that we've got now, that does the Xbox One bring anything more than enhanced graphics apart from the gameplay isn't there, is it?
Well, the gameplay is based on the design of the game itself. I mean, you look at the Wii's got shit graphics, but actually the gameplay is superb.
Yeah.
You know, Wii Sports, it was brilliant at the time. It was groundbreaking. It was very accurate. I don't think Xbox gives anything more in terms of gameplay, but it certainly gives a lot more in terms of graphics ability to do more with the gameplay. One begat the other, one facilitate the other, perhaps.
Mm. There is a story I saw today, Borderlands, which is one of the more popular Xbox and PS4 games. They're actually releasing it for the last-gen consoles. I think they're doing it in conjunction with the new consoles, but they're doing it with the old-gen consoles, because if you're going to release a game, you've got a bigger market with the old-gen consoles than you have with the new ones. And I don't think it's taken off in the way that the company thought that it would. I think they thought they'd have flooded the market by now, but it hasn't really taken off in that way, because gaming's changed, hasn't it? Because we game in a different way that we did kind of 8 or 9 years ago when Xbox and PS4 came out.
I think that's exactly the point. I mean, Jeff and Streak chime in here, but I would have said that actually in terms of the gaming market, is probably the biggest turnover in financial terms in the gaming market, Apple's.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
All right. All right. Right. You carry on then.
Sorry. No. It's just that with last week with Amazon coming out with a kind of Apple TV rival, they put a game controller with it, which is what everyone's expected Apple to do as well, you know, because obviously Apple's talking about gaming controls in iOS 7. I think that is where the casual gaming is where people are now. That kind of I'm not saying the market for kind of hardcore gaming has gone away, but I think more people are casual gaming than they are doing the hardcore gaming, and they're not willing to spend the money on the consoles, the money that Microsoft and Sony are asking. They're not willing to spend that money anymore because they'd rather just spend 5 minutes on the train or sitting on the loo or whatever playing a game. They would spend 3 or 4 hours playing kind of multiplayer Call of Duty, and they don't need a £500-600 console to do it, and £50 a game as well.
Yeah, straight.
Yeah, I was just looking up an article I found earlier here. 2/3 of players ditch free mobile games in less than 24 hours. I just thought that was interesting to add to that little debate there.
Really?
So, yeah, that's nasty statistic, and it kind of shows where this casual gaming stuff is on the mobile in general, I would say. It's not really in-depth experience people are looking for. It's definitely this little, like you said, Paul, on the toilet, on the commute, on whatever.
People want diversion games.
Yeah. I coined the phrase 2 years ago, morning motion games. And that's what people want. They want a game for the morning motion. 7 minutes tops. Otherwise your legs get numb and you can't get up then.
Oh, I completely misunderstood what you meant by morning motion. I've got it now. Okay.
Games to fill the morning motion. So they...
That's not the kind of motion that I thought you meant.
Oh, no. We're not talking teledildonic.
No.
And I was thinking, you know, I've got a totally open mind. And if there are games that I should be playing, then let me know. But otherwise, I couldn't understand why I would want to have some sort of mobile game with me while I was engaging in morning motion.
No. Oh, God, no. You live with someone now, Jeff. You don't do the morning motion anymore. Not that morning motion.
Tea and biscuit time is over.
Morning motion software. I went to start morning motion software, and I wanted games that you could play to completion in 7 minutes.
I'm sure there's a market for it. I mean, it might be a theoretically kind of small market, but it's there, I'm sure. There's a niche for everything.
Mate, when you've been married for 20 years and you've got two kids that are going to be awake at 6 a.m., 7 minutes is more than long enough.
Granted.
Oh, granted, said the boy with a two-year-old.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, boy.
This podcast and all of this is brought to you by UK2.net. You gotta say, these people are amazing. They've supported us now for nearly 4 years. Back when I'm going right back when bandwidth for podcasts was horrific. You used to do a podcast and you used to sit there and hope, I really don't get successful, because if I get successful, it's going to cost me a frigging fortune. And I go back to the times when your bandwidth was costing you effectively a mortgage payment a month if you had a successful podcast. And we had a lot of shows out very early, and UK2 picked up all of that bandwidth, and they still pick all our bandwidth up. The server that they provide us with, I mean, this is where the key thing's different for us, because we don't have sponsors as such. We have people that kind of ease the burden, and UK2 have eased the burden now for 4 years. So please support them, because they've supported us for a very long time. And people said to me, why don't you go with other people that provide internet stuff that would pay you money? I don't want to, because these guys sat by us right at the start. They believe in us. They invested in us. And I'm not going to walk away that just for get a quick buck. So please, please, please support UK2.net. Go to our webpage, BritishNetNetwork.com. Click on the sponsors link. Use their click-through. Use their offer codes. If you use the click-through and the offer codes, we get the kudos for it. And apparently as well, there's an awful lot of you every month are buying loads of stuff from UK2. And people are swapping over all the time. And UK2 are helping them. They've got an online support service, which is brilliant. You raise a ticket, you get an answer back virtually instantly. If you've got to raise it as critical, it's instant to half an hour at worst. And their support services are brilliant. And if you get any trouble over and above that, send me an email. I'll forward it on, because that's not what they want. They want absolutely very happy customers, and most of you are. There's tons of stuff out there as well now. Dot Coffee came out today as well. If you're a coffee shop owner, then you can get Dot Coffee. If you're not, well, 40 quid down the drain, innit? Don't buy it. What do I know? The other people to look out for as well are the Network Union. Now, I'm gonna say what I think they do, but you really need to go and talk to these guys. Go to BritishNetNetwork.com, click on the sponsors link. Network Union are there. Click on their page and go through and give them your email address. Now, they promise that your email address will remain within their system. They won't then start sending you spam or anything like that. They will just use it to get back in contact with you. They won't sell it on to anyone else. That's it. And that was one of the key features of why we went with them. They provide all of the broadband that comes in and takes all of the video shows and pushes them out to the network. And they pay for that into BTN towers, if you like. So again, it's cost alleviation for us. But they're an authorised business partner for BT. Now, if you've got a deal with them, with BT, and you're a small to medium-sized enterprise, or you're even a large enterprise and you've got a WAN system through them, then get in touch with the Network Union, because they may be able to provide an extra layer of support to you. They're right there in the middle. They can help you with reappraisal of your financing or your pricing system, and they can sort you out and be a liaison with BT. You've still got your contract with BT. You're not paying any money to the Network Union. What they are is an extra layer of support, effectively. But like I say, I'm not the one to talk to. Go and talk to these guys, because they know everything about small to medium enterprises and very large corporations, and they will sort you out a great deal and support your business system. So check them out, the Network Union, through BTN, and we thank them very much for their support, and we thank UK2 for their support as well. As we'd be lost without them, absolutely. Right then, don't forget Patreon, patreon.com, patreon.com. Support us, place an entry. It doesn't matter if you just want to put a dollar in. If you're saying, right, I listen to all the podcasts on the network, well, give us 60p a month, and it makes a world of difference to us. We've got a ton of equipment we need to buy in the next few months, and we will be providing you with great entertainment. If you love what we did at Macworld, if we get up to the $12,000 a month threshold, we will send people out and we will cover events live. South by Southwest, NAB, Mobile World Congress is coming up. We'll be there if you support us to that level. We promise we will. Absolutely. Right, cool things then, chaps. What have we got? Streak, start us off, boy.
Yes, something related to my pick last time I was on. You remember the Game Boy? There is a really, really nifty little thing called a EverDrive. It's basically a cartridge. Well, you have to put it into your own plastic case, but you have the cartridge anyway. And you put a micro SD card in it, upon which you can put all the applications, games, whatever you have for the Game Boy. So you can have your whole collection, effectively, of Game Boy games in one convenient cartridge. It's kind of recently released, and it's really awesome. I really want one, need I say.
About $80 for these?
Somewhere around there, yes. I believe that's correct. Depends a little bit on where you shop around for it, but somewhere around there, yeah.
Compatible with all systems, supports GB, GBC cartridges, including Super Game Boy stuff.
Yes, that's kind of the cool thing about it as well. So if you put it in your Super Game Boy, you actually get all the benefits of doing so. You get the border around the game on the TV and everything. So it's really compatible, and it's really, really awesome for what it is.
I'm guessing the beauty of this is the fact that every game that's ever been invented by Nintendo fits on a 16-gig card or something.
Yeah, I think I did some math on it a while ago, and I think you can even get away with like a 2-gig card, and you have plenty of space to spare. So, I mean, it doesn't take much space, and like you said, you have every single game, at least you ones you own, if you're going to go down the legal path at least. I mean, always with you, and you can just flip the switch on the device, start playing whichever you want.
And going back to what we were talking about earlier, it's about the gameplay, and the gameplay on Nintendo was always awesome, even Street Fighter.
Yeah, and I'm kind of a retro nerd, so I mean, this is right up my alley. I mean, the EverDrive is brilliant.
Excellent. Good pick. I like that one. $80 if you want to get it to places you can go to. We went to shop.retrograte.com/EverDrive, GB, EDGB, HTM. You get it for a Google search.
And they have all the other EverDrives as well, which is for pretty much every system at this point.
Excellent. Good pick, mate. I like that one. Jeffrey, what do you have for us?
All right, I'm going to try turning on my camera. Maybe it will not be quite so choppy for a moment. All right. So what I have is a portable scanner, and this is called the Doxy Go. And the cool thing about the scanner is that you don't actually have to you don't connect it to a computer when you're using it. It's just a standalone little scanner, and you feed your documents in. They spit out the backside, and it uses its own memory to hold the images of the documents, or you can pop in an SD card or a USB thumb drive and store your documents there. And then when you connect it back to your computer later on, it then synchronizes the images out to your computer and your mobile devices as well. It does 300 and 600 DPI. It even includes a little sleeve thing that you can put photographs in, so you can feed photographs through very easily. And it works really well, has its own little built-in battery. And yeah, so you can just throw it in a bag and go, and not even worry about whether or not you'll have a power source when you need to run some scans. And I'm impressed with it so far.
Paul Wheatley put me onto one of those type of things at Macworld, and it is stunning. I mean, the quality is excellent. The speed is blinding on those type of things.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with the speed of this thing. It's like you feed a piece of paper in, and boom, it's scanned.
Excellent. No, it really is good. Really, really is good. Price?
I believe this one is $200.
Which is not the end of the world for what it's providing you with, I have to say.
Right.
Yeah. And it took both SD cards and thumb drives?
Yep, SD cards and thumb drives. Plus, it has enough built-in RAM to store, at 300 DPI, 600 scans.
Oh, that's good.
I got to get me one of those.
Well, I mean, they are fantastic. I mean, I know that Fujitsu is releasing a new one, but the problem with the new one from Fujitsu is it's... it's a touch pricey, it has to be said. It's like $800.
So, yeah. So. Yeah. Oh, here's another cool thing about this one. You can pop an iFi card into the SD slot. And if you're on a Wi-Fi network, you can scan in, and the iFi card will actually send the images off to wherever you want them to go.
Of course.
Without ever having to connect to a computer.
Yeah, no, Wi-Fi is great because it's its own little network, isn't it? Superb. Great pick, mate. Great pick. Price, again, you did ask you, but I've forgotten.
$200.
$200, that's what you did say. Good one. Thank you. Mr. Shadwell, what do you have for us?
I have two things, if that's okay.
Yeah, you can have as many things as you like, mate.
All right. So I have one of these. This is a Blackmagic Pocket Cinema camera.
Yep, with a Micro Four Thirds on it.
Yeah, and this particular lens is an Olympus 45mm. Which is quite nice, but when I was in, I've been trying to get hold of a Metabones speed booster, and they've been out of stock for a while. And while I was in the US, they came in stock, got an email. I ordered it, and when I got back, it was here. So that's the speed booster. And that means that I can, first of all, I'll take off the lens from the
This is great if you're on audio camera. Only.
Sorry. It's Micro Four Thirds. So it's an adapter.
Yeah.
But it's a speed booster as well. And that means now I can take the lens from this camera, which is a D7000 Nikon, and fit it on to the front of my...
The clinking you're hearing is Paul detaching said lens.
Yes. Yes.
So it gives you all the Metabone stuff is about an interconnection, isn't it? And gives you variability from your Micro Four Thirds and gives you autofocus as well as.
No, it doesn't do autofocus. Not with these lenses, because obviously this is a different connection.
Some of the Metabone stuff.
Yes, some of them. Okay, not in this case. For mine, this is a Nikon 18-300 zoom lens from my Nikon camera. So I can use that, and actually any of my Nikon lenses will fit this now as well, so I don't have to go out and get special lenses. But the beauty of the speed booster is it actually boosts up the speed of the lens as well. So it takes, just get the spec here, it's a 0.58 times speed boost. So anything that, like, for example, this one is a 3.5 to 5.6. So you take 0.58 off of that, so you get the speed up on that. So anyway, there you go.
Excellent. Excellent.
I thought that'd be interesting. So
there it is. Absolutely.
And so that's that. The other thing is, I'm just going to move my camera. Okay, this is another thing that's going to be not particularly good for audio. But around here...
There's nothing stopping you describing it, mate. You do realise.
I hope you can see this.
It's very dark.
Oh, really? Okay. Under here, it's a... Yeah, it's very dark. Let me just... A second. You guess what it is?
It's okay. Some kind
behind
of
my monitors is a Mac Pro. It's a Mac Pro.
You've got a Mac Pro! You git!
I picked it up last week. Yeah, last Friday.
It actually finally arrived. And is it everything that you expected?
Yeah. I'll tell you what. I've been downloading updates. I've been on Skype with you. And chatting to a few people all at the same time and all through the Mac Pro.
Yeah, thanks for paying attention, mate.
Over my gigabit Wi-Fi. Yeah.
Give over. Gigabit Wi-Fi, you bastard.
So that's my pick. I hope you'll invite me back and not hate me anymore.
Yeah, well, no, I hate you for having one of those already anyway, so there we go. Bastard. When did you order that to get it, though?
January.
January, God blimey,
yeah.
There was a tweet from Fake Johnny Ive this week that said that the aim this year at WWDC was not to release a new Mac Pro, but to actually deliver the fuckers that they actually did last year, which I thought was very good.
Yeah,
very good. I did say good pony there as well.
Well, I said last week that the more I watch the making of the Mac Pro video, the more I see people standing around with their arms folded.
Yeah. No, it is good. It's gorgeous. I do want one. Thank you very much. Bastard. Righty, what have you got for us, mate? Go on, top that. Mac Pro, $6,000's worth.
Hello, mate.
I reckon that the broadband issues at my end now. Hello?
Sorry?
Yeah, go ahead, mate.
Hello?
Oh, we're offline, apparently.
Yeah, apparently we're dead to the world.
Oh,
anyway,
surprised.
I'll give you this little brick.
A brick? Go on there, mate.
Well, see, I fear being offline and losing battery power all the time, and I had lots of battery cases with my iPhone 5 and my iPhone 4S.
Absolutely. And, no idea what you just said. Is that a backup battery?
It's the Anker. It's a backup. It's the Anker.
Anker.
Astro.
Rhymes with
Anker.
Anker Astro.
we all know.
Wanker.
Backup battery.
Oh, that'd be good. Right. The problem with all the batteries for the area of my OS, this will charge anything that's got a USB connection. So obviously it will charge presses, iPods, galaxies, charge your iPad, all that sort of thing. It'll charge your iPhone 3 times over, an iPad twice over. The reason I've got it, I don't know why I've got it, is on the bottom. It's got a light on the bottom. When you're sitting there in the theater, it was a USB gazing. And the best thing about it is, normally $49.99, at the moment, it's just 20. You can go on with that.
Oh, man alive. I have no idea what you've just described. Send us a link, mate, and we'll put it in the show notes because
I bet it was brilliant.
That was the best review of something I've ever not seen. Thank you very much, mate.
What's happened?
I have no idea.
Charlie Brown's teacher understood everything.
It sounds like shit at the moment. Everything's gone.
Everyone in there's gone to shit.
Everything's gone to shit, and I have no idea why. My CPU's running at 98%, which I don't know why, because it's trying to do 30 frames a second, and it's only set at 15 frames a second, so it shouldn't do that. I've got no idea why it's doing it, but there we go. We're recording all right at this end, apart from the fact you sound
I'll awful. Do it again.
No, don't do it again. Just send us a link, and I'll... Oh, Jesus Christ. Streak's just gone into lamb chop. There we go. You've gone as well as so no idea. And my cool thing is these illuminated slippers from the Kleenex catalog that came through the door this afternoon. These buggers are the best thing since sliced bread. If you're an old fart and can't see where you're going, you need a pair of these slippers. They are £19.90. They're from Clean Easy, and they've got little tiny LEDs in the toes. And when you stand in them, the LEDs light up so you can see where you're going. There's about enough light to come off these to see 1 millimetre in front of your slippers. They're absolute bollocks. Don't buy them. And apparently they're supposed to sell for $30. But they're utter shite, so don't buy them. That's not my pick. That really is not my pick. My pick is some guys that we met at Macworld who were absolutely superb, and they are iSkelter. These people do stuff that's made out of bamboo, and it is extremely well thought out and absolutely beautiful desk equipment. So you sit in front of the TV, and you're like, oh, I need to sit and do a bit of work, but I still want to watch the TV. And you buy those things from shops, and it's like, well, they're just big enough for your computer, and I don't like using the trackpad, I want to use a mouse. This thing's got a mouse pad to the right. It's also got a charging station for your iPhone as well, and it's got a whole pile of holes drilled through it so that you can duct away the heat from your MacBook and not burn your legs. It's absolutely superb. It's $98, so that only equates to about £60, and they deliver everywhere. So go to iSlate. They're at iSkelter.com, but look for the Slate Pro. And the other thing that they've got is the Slate Pro is a desk. So if you want a full desk that's in this design for $498, it's not the cheapest thing out there, but they give you a Perspex surface on it. There's a place to charge your iPad, your iPhone. There's also a built-in mouse pad. They're beautiful, beautiful desks. I've seen one of these in the flesh, and they're absolutely gorgeous. Check them out. iSkelter.com if you want to go and see what they are. The Slate Pro and the Slate Go. They're beautiful. They're not cheap, but I've got to say, it was one of the products I fell in love with at Macworld. If you're thinking about what Macworld was like, then tune in tomorrow because we've got a lot of people who are at Macworld. Alison Sheridan's going to be here. Paul Kent's going to be here, the man that throws Macworld every year. We've got Mac OS Ken's going to be here, Ken Ray. We've also got Paul Wheatley. We've got Mac Genie, which is Jean McDonald, who did AppCamp for Girls. She's going to come along and talk as well. A whole pile of people from Macworld. It is a big wash-up show from Macworld. Tomorrow afternoon, 4 p.m. It's a little bit later than normal. 4 p.m. on Friday, if you want to view that. Where can we get a hold of you people, Streak Machine?
Yes, you can find me on streetmachine.com, which is the usual place I like to send people to. And as you recommended earlier, you can also go into the little section I call books, or book currently. So just click yourself in there and you can find all the information about my currently available book. And you can also, you know, easily just click once and
where
buy
do people
it.
Get your book?
It's through a different service. It's called Gumroad, and you get a DRM-free version for, well, pretty much your Kindle, your iDevice or other tablet that can read e-books, and you get the PDF. Excellent. So you get something that covers all different systems, hopefully.
Excellent, mate. Love that. Well worth the read as well, I'd say. Jeff Gamet, where are you, sir?
I'm hiding out at Mac Observer, so that's macobserver.com. And you can also find me on Twitter and app.net, jgamet, both places. And you can find me at Fresh Brewed Tales, where I talk about the ridiculous things I see people do in coffee shops. And we live in a world filled with stupid people.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yes, and a ton of podcasts, all just, like, all over the internet.
Good man. Well done. Slim Shadwell, where are you?
He's not here. Okay, you can find me, Paul Shadwell, at Paul Shadwell on Twitter, PaulShadwell. And all my other links, if you go to about.me/PaulShadwell, you'll find everywhere else where I am.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. And last but by no means least, Righty Boy.
Hello, mate. Obviously, always on Twitter, always on BritishTechNetwork.com, and this Saturday at the Gadget Show.
You will be there, reporting for us, pressing the flesh.
Pressing the flesh, yes, I will be, yeah. Why not?
Market Stall Live. I got to say, I didn't get to go to the Gadget Show. Every year, they geff us out for a press price. So we send them in requests for press pass, and they go, nah, you're not a real press agency, which is very perceptive of them, because we are, really aren't, but... they deaf us out every year, and I've got to say, I paid to go last year, and it was like a market stall everywhere. There was people selling helicopters to fly in cages and stuff like that that you can hurt people with. I was like, what on earth? There was very few innovations there, very few decent stands, and I talked to Paul Kirkle. He bought me a curry, by the way. Thank you very much, Paul Kirkle, for buying my curry the other night. But he said, there's some absolute gems in there, but yes, it's a lot of people selling a lot of shit this year.
Oh, I'm really looking forward to my weekend now.
I bet you spent a fortune coming over from there. You've sold the cow, haven't you?
I've sold the cow, the donkey, the goat, chickens.
Bad luck, mate. Bad luck. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, and we'll be here again tomorrow with the Mac Show, and we've got loads of stuff. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/BritishTechNetwork if you want to support us. If you send us even a dollar, you'll be entered in the draw for that fantastic bunch of prizes you saw earlier. Thanks for listening. See you next week.